So back in November, I talked to you about doing a soil test, using slow-release amendments in the garden to do their work gradually over the winter, and then doing another soil test in the spring to see how well it worked. Well, now's the time in most areas to be doing that spring soil test before you start planting your spring or summer gardens. But what do you do if that spring test shows the amendments that you added in the fall just weren't enough to fix the problem? This time around, you'll need something that works into the soil a little bit more quickly if you want the garden ready in time to grow a lush crop for spring and summer. And even then, you may find the need to add some supplemental plant food to directly feed the plants instead of the soil to be sure that you get a good harvest. So today on Just Grow Something, we'll go over the organic amendments that you can be adding to the garden now that will give the soil a quick boost and the possible ways to feed the plants directly while waiting for the soil to improve. Let's dig in. Hey, I'm Karen. I started gardening in a small corner of my suburban backyard, and now 18 years later, I've got a degree in horticulture and operate a 40-acre market farm. I believe there is power in food and that everyone should know how to grow at least a little bit of their own. On this podcast, I share evidence-based techniques to help you plant, grow, harvest, and store all your family's favorites. Consider me your friend in the garden. So grab your garden journal and a cup of coffee and get ready to just grow something.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
Before we jump into soil amendments, let's talk about a little gardening news. The United States Department of Agriculture, or USDA, proclaimed April 2024 as Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month. I am not kidding. So if you are a gardener or a camper, or if you travel or you do any kind of online shopping for plant or ag stuff, it is important to learn about the danger of invasive plant pests and what you can do to help. The problem with invasive pests is that they really don't have very many enemies when they get to a new environment. And so they multiply really quickly, and their population continues to increase unchecked. Eventually, they start to compete with the native species for resources, and then they can cause problems for the environment and for area farms, and then also for us as gardeners. Non-native plant pests can actually hitch a ride in all kinds of ways. They can come in on untreated firewood. They can attach themselves to vehicles and other outdoor surfaces. They can even take a ride through the mail. They can also get into new areas on agricultural material like soil or seeds or produce or plants. So here is what we can do to reduce the impact of invasive plant pest species. First off, visit your state's Department of Agriculture or Department of Conservation website and learn about what quarantines are going on in your area. Familiarize yourself with the signs of invasive pest infestation, whether they're on outdoor gear or on wild plants or even in your garden. If you find signs of a new plant pest or disease in your area, then report them to your local extension office or to your state's Department of Agriculture. Now, if you're a camper or if you use a wood stove or fireplace, don't move untreated firewood in or out of your local area, even if it looks like it's pest-free on the outside. You never know what is being carried around on the inside. And then when ordering agricultural materials online, Figure out where the item is being shipped from and make sure that you are adhering to any import requirements for any agricultural materials that are coming from overseas. If you don't know where an agricultural product is coming from, don't buy it online. And this is especially important for us in the U.S. because U.S. regulations apply to the importer. That means the person who is making the buy and is technically importing the product. It is not the online merchant that is liable for this. So buy the item domestically or learn how to safely and legally import plants and seeds before you purchase them online from overseas. And kind of along with this is also don't mail homegrown plants, fruits, or vegetables. I am actually kind of guilty of this one. Not the fruits and vegetables, but the plants. My brother and sister-in-law have a neighbor with a greenhouse, and she grows tropicals. She has gifted me plants occasionally, two that I brought back with me in my carry-on, and one that my sister-in-law is supposed to be mailing me. They're in Oregon. I'm in Missouri. Of course, these are house plants, and I am vigilant about cleaning the plants for pests before I put them in my house, but that's not an excuse. That doesn't mean that I should be doing this. So this was a reminder for me not to be mailing plants. And finally, declare all agricultural items, including seeds, soil, or ag-related crafted items, to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection for inspection when you are returning from overseas travel. Declaring these items protects local plants from those invasive pests, and it is required by law. So if you want more information about invasive plant pests and diseases, you can go to the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service website. That is hungrypests.com. And I will leave that link in the episode notes. So happy spring, everyone, and happy Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month. Yay. Okay, so as gardeners, we sometimes are going to need fast-acting soil amendments to address nutrient deficiencies and to adjust pH levels in our gardens in the spring. In the fall, we talked about slow release. Today, we're talking fast-acting. Now, of course, I am not a proponent of synthetic versions of these amendments for long-term use, so those will not be covered, although we will talk about some synthetics when we talk about fertilizers, so more on that later. So let's talk about some organic amendments that can quickly boost nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium levels, and then we will talk about some options for adjusting pH. First up is nitrogen. We know nitrogen is an essential nutrient for our plants, but why is it so important? Nitrogen is a primary building block of proteins, which are essential for plant structure and function. Many enzymes that drive biochemical reactions in plants require nitrogen. It is a critical component of chlorophyll molecules, which are essential for photosynthesis and the plant's ability to produce sugars. Adequate nitrogen supports vigorous vegetative growth, including leaves, stems, and branches. It also plays a crucial role in cell division and elongation, contributing to overall plant size and structure. Nitrogen plays a role in the uptake of other essential nutrients such as phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrients, and it helps regulate the opening and closing of stomata, which affects water and nutrient uptake. Now, keep in mind that the temperature of the soil is going to affect the available nitrogen. So your soil test may not always be completely accurate in terms of how much nitrogen you actually have in your soil. But if you've grown plants in that spot before, it's kind of a good assumption that you're going to need to add some sort of nitrogen back into the soil. That's just one of the many reasons I like organic nutrients, because you have less of a chance of overdoing it and burning your plants if you adhere to the proper application ratios and you are building the soil at the same time. My favorite two fast-acting nitrogen amendments are blood meal and fish emulsion. Blood meal is usually got an NPK ratio of around 1200. It's derived from dried blood, so it does provide a quick nitrogen boost. Typically, you might use around a half to one cup of the blood meal per 10 square feet of garden bed, and you just mix it into the soil and then water it in really well. Fish emulsion is a liquid fertilizer. It's made from fish byproducts. It also gives a nice quick nitrogen boost. When I'm using it to treat the soil, I'm usually mixing it with water and applying it as a soil drench. So depending on which one you get, you should follow the instructions on the product. But generally around 1 to 2 tablespoons for a gallon of water is what I use. Next up is phosphorus. Phosphorus is a key component of adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. This is the molecule that is responsible for storing and transferring energy within cells. And this includes photosynthesis and respiration and cell division. Adequate phosphorus also promotes strong root development. It is crucial for the formation of flowers, seeds, and fruits. It helps plants transition from vegetative growth stage to the reproductive growth stage. So this impacts the flowering time and the fruit quality. It also plays an important role in nutrient uptake, especially nitrogen and potassium. See, they're all working together there. And adequate phosphorus levels enhance a plant's ability to withstand environmental stresses, so like drought and disease. If you have low phosphorus in your plant, it makes it weaker and more defenseless against those environmental stresses. Now, I don't know of any organic soil amendment out there that is super fast acting in terms of organic phosphorus. So your best bet is to continue using the slow release amendments that we talked about for use in the fall. And that is bone meal or rock phosphate. So bone meal is a natural source of phosphorus. NPK is usually around 3:15:0. It's made from ground animal bones. So you might use about 1 to 2 cups per 10 square feet. Just mix it into the top few inches of the soil. Again, water it in really well. Rock phosphate is another sort of slow-release phosphorus source. It can have a really wide range of an NPK ratio. It could be 0:30 all the way up to 0:20. So it depends on what you buy. It does release the phosphorus gradually over time. You're looking at about using 2 to 4 pounds per 100 square feet mixed into the soil. Also remember that organic material, as it breaks down, releases phosphorus into the soil. So keep adding compost or other organic materials to your soil to prevent a phosphorus deficiency, and it will automatically add that phosphorus naturally. Next up is potassium. Potassium helps regulate the opening and closing of the stomata, those tiny pores on the leaves. This regulation affects water uptake. It helps the plants maintain proper hydration. Potassium also helps control the movement of water and nutrients within the plant cells. It's also involved in activating many of the enzymes that are responsible for various metabolic processes like photosynthesis and respiration. It also plays a role in the synthesis of ATP, that energy in the cells that we talked about earlier, which again helps in photosynthesis. Potassium supports flowering and fruit development, and it also enhances a plant's resistance to diseases and pests by strengthening the cell walls. This makes those plants less susceptible to pathogen attacks and environmental stresses. Unfortunately, with potassium, there is also nothing very fast-acting in an organic sense, so we add the same amendments that we would in the fall, and that is wood ash or green sand. So wood ash, you know, contains potassium. It also raises the pH of the soil. So this should be used cautiously and not excessively because it is so alkaline. So generally you start with a very light application, a couple of inches across the top of the soil, and then you mix it in really well. Green sand is a mineral-rich amendment. It has an NPK of around 0.03. It also releases potassium very slowly. You would probably use about 5 to 10 pounds per 100 square feet and mix that into the top a few inches of the soil. It's not too frequently that we see much in the way of a potassium deficiency. All three of these macronutrients work together to supply our plants with the essential functions to be their best little plant selves. But one other component of the soil that's almost as equally important is the soil pH. So too high or too low, and it can restrict the movement of those important macronutrients through the soil and a lot of the micronutrients too. Nothing is going to change the pH of your soil quickly, nor do we want it to. If you take your test in the spring and the pH still needs adjusting, the two best options are lime and sulfur. We use lime for raising the pH. Two common types are dolomitic lime, which contains magnesium, and calcitic lime. The rates are going to vary based on your soil test results, but a general guideline would be 5 to 10 pounds per 100 square feet to raise the pH by one unit. So if you're at a pH of 5.5 and you want the soil at 6.5, that's one full unit. So going from 5.5 to 6 would be a half unit. So you would use the lime at half the rate. And don't forget, wood ash also raises the pH level. So if you're adding that for potassium, then wait to add the lime to be sure that you don't raise the levels too much. Now, we use sulfur for lowering the pH. That application rate, again, is going to vary based on your soil test results, but generally speaking, around 1 to 2 pounds per 100 square feet is going to lower the pH by one unit. So if you're at 7.5, that rate will drop it to 6.5. Again, for only half unit, use half the rate. It's best to incorporate sulfur into the soil well ahead of planting to allow time for it to take effect. So if you are doing this in the spring, don't expect the pH is going to change too much until more like the summertime. Just keep testing and adjusting in small increments as you go. Of course, it's very possible that even with these amendments, our plants may show some signs of deficiency. What are those signs, and what can we do to help our plants immediately if they're in distress? If you're looking to create timeless beauty in your garden, there's no better way than to add roses. Heirloom Roses knows that the best roses start with the best roots, which is why they only hand-propagate own root roses. Roses from the big box stores are grafted onto different rootstock, which is why I think I've never had much luck with roses. These own root roses will outlive and outshine those others, resulting in stronger disease resistance, a longer lifespan, and stunning blooms that are always true to variety. Located in Oregon, Heirloom Roses is a family-owned business that grows over 900 varieties of roses for gardening zones 3 through 11. Yes, 900 varieties. You can use their great search tool to narrow down your choice based on zone, fragrance, growth habit, color, and more. That's how I found my new favorite, the Julio Iglesias Rose. Plus, they have a one-year guarantee, so if your rose doesn't thrive in its first year, they will replace it for free. As a special offer for my listeners, Heirloom Roses is offering 20% off all roses with code JUSTGROW now through October 31st, 2024. And since they ship year-round, you can shop now and choose the perfect ship date for your gardening zone. It's time to experience growing roses the way nature intended, on their own roots. Take 20% off your roses with code JUSTGROW at heirloomroses.com. Emergency feeding of plants is sometimes going to be necessary if they are really struggling. And sometimes the plant foods or fertilizers that are going to work best for our plant in that situation might not be organic in nature. So organic fertilizers usually contain plant or animal nutrients in lower concentrations depending on the raw material, but they have a much wider range of nutrients than just the big three, the nitrogen, the phosphorus, and the potassium, right? There's usually micronutrients involved as well. The bonus with organics is they also help improve the soil structure. This is why when I'm feeding my plants a supplemental plant food as part of my like regular routine, it's usually Elmdirt's plant juice or bloom juice because it works well with the soil. But in a plant emergency, a product like that just doesn't have a high enough concentration of nutrients to affect the plant immediately. There are others we can use, which we'll go over in a minute, but sometimes we need something stronger. Synthetic fertilizers go through a manufacturing process. Finished conventional fertilizers do start with naturally occurring mineral deposits and atmospheric nitrogen, and then they're processed into a form that can be used by the plants, and then they're sometimes combined with other elements and other processed products to basically create a plant food. These are generally focused on those big three macronutrients, and they are available in much higher concentration than most organic versions. The reason synthetics get such a bad rap is partially because of that higher concentration. If they're overused, whatever the plants don't take up remains in the soil. And then, since the soil microbes really can't use it because of the form that it's in, it just gets washed away with the next rainstorm or the next time that we irrigate. And then it makes its way into the watersheds and into the waterways, and it starts causing problems downstream, and it's just a mess. Most of the times we think about this on a large scale. We're talking about, you know, large agricultural production, but the same thing can happen in our gardens, just to a smaller extent. So would I rather everyone use organic amendments and fertilizers? Yes. Do I recognize that in an emergency situation, in order to save a plant or an entire bed of plants in the garden, that the synthetic version may be the more fast-acting approach? Also, yes. Just be sure that whatever fertilizer you choose, you are using it as directed on the label for your safety, the safety of your plants, and the safety of our water supply. So, if you're looking in your plants and they're starting to look kind of funky, let's figure out what these deficiency symptoms are. A nitrogen deficiency usually results in stunted growth. They may have small, pale leaves. The leaves may start to yellow. Usually, it's going to be on those older leaves, so they're going to start turning yellow from the bottom up, starting with those lower leaves. You're going to see fewer flowers and fruits, which is, of course, going to impact your yield. And you just get this sort of overall look of a sickly kind of plant. It's just, they're more susceptible to diseases and environmental stresses when they lack nitrogen. So, some types of fertilizers that can be used to quickly address nitrogen deficiency are blood meal and fish emulsion, when we're talking about the organic stuff. Now, in this case, the blood meal is going to be used as a side dressing. So, this is one of those things that we can use as a soil amendment to amend the soil, but we can also use it to sort of immediately feed the plant, because the form of nitrogen that is in blood meal is in a readily available form to the plant. So we just kind of use it as a side dressing, about a half to one cup per 10 square feet of garden bed, and then just water it in really well. And that watering in is going to deliver that nitrogen in a quick way by using the water. And typically the NPK ratio, again, for blood meal is around 1200. So this should give your plants a good boost of nitrogen. Another one is fish emulsion. This one, in this instance, we're going to use it as a foliar spray. So whereas we're treating the soil before and we use it as a soil drench, which you could still do in this case as well, but you can also dilute it and use it as a foliar spray, which makes it a little bit more immediately available where the plant needs it. Because the NPK ratio is usually fairly low, a 5-1-1, you're not in danger of damaging the plants, so long as you're not spraying this on in the middle of the day and then letting them cook in the sun. So mix 1 to 2 tablespoons of gallon or per gallon of water and then apply it around the soil, around the plant root zones, or dilute it even further and just spray it as a foliar spray. Now, another fast-acting nitrogen fertilizer would be urea. The NPK ratio on this is typically 4600. So we are talking high, high nitrogen. In most instances, this is a synthetic organic nitrogen fertilizer, meaning it is created with both organic and inorganic substances, usually by combining ammonia and carbon dioxide. However, there are organic options out there. Espoma, I think, has one. And this is possible because urea is the main nitrogen-containing substance in the urine of mammals. So if we take some of that animal waste and we ferment it with other organic ingredients, then boom, we have another waste product that's been turned into fertilizer. So read the label of what you find and choose according to your gardening preferences. This is very, very rapidly going to dissolve in water for quick uptake by the plants. So be cautious because it is very, very strong. Be sure that you are following the package instructions. If it's in a granular form, it's usually just like 1 tablespoon per square feet. If it's in a liquid form, then you're going to dilute it according to what the manufacturer says to use. And then finally, we have ammonium sulfate. It is a fully synthetic fertilizer containing nitrogen and sulfur. The NPK ratio on this is usually around 2100, so not quite as strong as the urea, but definitely stronger than the blood meal or the fish emulsion, which is what makes it so effective. It does provide very quick nitrogen for your plants, best applied when the plants are actively growing, so make sure that you are checking the instructions on the back. It's usually about a quarter to a half a cup per 10 square feet and then watered in really well, but make sure that you're following the instructions on whichever one it is that you pick up. Regardless of which one of these that you use, after applying any type of a nitrogen fertilizer to the soil, you want to water the plants thoroughly to help those nutrients move into the root zone. And you want to do this with plants that are actively growing. Do not do this when you have plants that you have newly transplanted, because this is just too much all at once, and the plants are already going to be under a little bit of stress just being transplanted at all. Always read and follow the instructions on the fertilizer label for the specific type and brand that you are using. Now, when plants show signs of a phosphorus deficiency, it is actually pretty critical to address this pretty promptly, because this is how we're going to support healthy root development and flowering and fruiting. Phosphorus deficiency symptoms include stunted growth. They may actually just look short. Some of the plants may develop purple or reddish discoloration on the leaves, especially on the underside of the leaves. Phosphorus deficiency can delay flowering or reduce the number of flowers, and the fruits and the seeds may be smaller or fail to develop fully if they don't have sufficient phosphorus. So, other than bone meal and rock phosphate, most phosphorus fertilizers are inorganic. You often can find organic fertilizer blends that contain equal amounts of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, plus some micronutrients. But if you truly just need the phosphorus and the bone meal or the rock phosphate aren't doing the job, well, the inorganic stuff may be what you need to use in a pinch. The inorganic forms are generally derived from phosphate rock that has been treated with sulfuric acid, which separates out the phosphorus. And then this creates phosphoric acid. And then that byproduct can be combined with like ammonia or sulfur or whatever to create additional fertilizer products. You're generally going to see phosphorus fertilizers labeled as something like superphosphate or triple superphosphate. Just look closely at the label and decide what you need and follow the directions on the label. But here is something to think about before you jump to going and buying a phosphorus fertilizer. Phosphorus availability decreases in the soil when the soil has a high pH. So it's very important to maintain the proper pH level for phosphorus uptake. So make sure that you're checking your pH level before you assume that your soil doesn't have enough phosphorus. It may just mean the phosphorus can't get to the plant because the pH is too high. Of course, after applying any kind of phosphorus fertilizer, you want to water the plants thoroughly again, just to make sure you get those nutrients to move into the root zone. And then finally, let's talk about potassium deficiency. This is going to manifest itself in weak stems, so they may be prone to bending or even breaking. You can see yellowed edges or the tips of the leaves look like they have literally been burned. We call this leaf scorch. It looks like they are burned all along those outer margins. Potassium deficiency can also lead to fewer flowers or fruits, or they just have a really low quality, or they're really small. And then the plants themselves may just grow really slowly. And that's when they don't have enough potassium. So as far as organic potassium fertilizers, we're back to wood ash, and it is not fast acting. We know that. In this instance, you would be doing it rather than tilling it into or turning it into the soil. You're just going to sprinkle it lightly around the plants and water it in. Just remember, again, this might possibly change the soil pH. So there's got to be a little give and take there. Make sure that you're not using too much. Make sure that you're checking your pH as you go along. The inorganic or synthetic version of this is potassium sulfate, and this has got an MPK ratio of 0.050. So really, really high on the potassium end. So obviously very quickly available for plant uptake. You will either mix this into the soil or apply it as a side dressing. The rate is usually about 1 or 2 tablespoons per plant, but specifically follow the package instructions. And again, potassium availability, just like phosphorus, decreases in high pH soils. So if your plants look like they have a potassium deficiency, check your soil pH. If it's above 7.0, that may be the real issue, just like with phosphorus. So feed the plants what they need, but then work on your soil. Okay, so here's the gist of all of this. Test your soil in the fall, amend at that point with slow release amendments. Test again in the spring to see if there's still a deficiency, or if you're testing for the first time and you find a problem, then use some faster acting organic soil amendments. If your plants start showing signs of deficiencies during the growing season, find the best fertilizer for the job and feed the plants while continuing to work on improving your soil. Do the best you can with what you can get your hands on, and understand that maintaining the soil to grow plants that are not native to that soil can be a challenge, and you are not alone in this. Until next time, my gardening friends, keep on cultivating that dream garden, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Just Grow Something podcast. For more information about today's topic and to find all the ways you can get in touch with me or support the show, go to justgrowsomethingpodcast.com. It's derived from dried blood, which gives a kind of quick nutrigen boost. Nutrigen? I did that again. Until next time, my gardening friends, keep learning and keep growing.